Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Adam Lowry, uncertain to be around next year. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and Bark Stewart's former fashion consultant, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Very good. I was happy to have last week off from work. It was spring break for the kids, so I had some time on my hands.
Oh, we're getting to that.
Yeah.
You beautiful mind. Vaughn put his podcasting skills to work over his break. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, hopefully we stumbled onto something semi-interesting, but it was a fun week. You know, spent some time around the boys, and my youngest is kind of taken to video games. We inherited a PS3 from my brother and sister-in-law, and NHL 13 and NHL 14 came with
nice.
It. So, yeah, he's spending a lot of time. He really enjoys playing those games. And the most interesting thing is now his introduction to all the players and is like whatever this is 8 or 9 years old, you know. So he knows everything about those two seasons, and he's kind of not up. So you know,
kind of like me.
Yeah, it raises some interesting questions and statements. You know, when he started playing, I made him be the Jets all the time, right? So he kind of got to know
as
those
a good
players. He really likes Burmistrov, and one day, you know, I'm upstairs in the kitchen. I'm up in the kitchen, and he comes running up the stairs. I'm making dinner, and he goes, Dad, Ron Hainsey is the worst. And I'm just like, yes, son, yes, he is. And, you know, just this week, he came upstairs, and he said to me, using like a breaking news type tone in his voice, he's like, Dad. Did you know Daniel and Hendrik Sedin retired?
A double pleasure is waiting for you. A double pleasure from Double Mint Gum.
I hope so.
Yeah, because they're... but, see, his reality is like 8 years ago, because that's all the guys he works with in the game. So it's been fun to see him sort of develop this, you know, repository of knowledge, but it's not now. It's like 8 years ago.
That's like my wife's pop culture references. She stopped in the 90s. So if it happened in the last 2 decades, we can't communicate about it. But I wanted to quickly, again, and I apologize, plug the old Twitter feed, at Airport Lounge 55. We try and stay as active as we can. I did want to, because we didn't actually talk about this, we posted a survey, and we're probably a little survey happy, but we posted a survey about, sort of a fun one, which Jets player do you think cheats at Monopoly? And the choices were Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Pionk, and Sammy Niku. And there was a whopping 9 votes. And I figured Niku might take it, and he did by a hair. But I was sort of thinking about it, and I was like, it's probably too narrow a field. Like, if you could pick any Jets player who you think is probably a bit underhanded when it comes to just meaningless board games, Who would you pick?
Well, the first one is a former Jet, and it would be Dustin Byfuglien. He doesn't like rules. He just does his own thing.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's the one that jumps out at me as, you know, and then maybe Matthew Perreault, like he would be like,
yeah,
you know, he would be claiming that, no, we play it like this in Quebec and the Quebec rule. And he'd be like elbowing people, and he'd be somehow it would just be all chaos when he's playing, and money would be disappearing, and he'd have, you know, properties would magically show up, you know, on his side of the table. And that's just how I think. But of those four, I think I definitely think of Sammy Niku. For me, you know, Wheeler's the captain, you know, college graduate, you know. Same thing with Pionk, another recent college graduate. I think they would be, you know, they could lean on their intellectual side. You know, we all know about Scheifele and his goody-two-shoes.
Yes, proclivity for nicety.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, is it too soon to make Evander Kane jokes? Because he would be my leader in the club host to cheat. But then I thought about it, and I was like, well, the reason he's in trouble is probably because he didn't cheat enough. So maybe that's not the proper person. But I had Niku as well. That's who I voted for. But it's hard to, like, when I was reviewing it, it's hard to cheat in Monopoly because, like, I'm a big Monopoly guy. I don't know if you are, but I am the worst person to play Monopoly with because I take it so seriously. Like, I've flipped boards. I've walked out of parties.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's luck, right? Like, depending on what properties you land on, and if somebody made, like, what I thought was an ill-advised trade, that's it. We're not friends for the night. Like, it was over. Like, I took it so seriously. Where I did cheat is, do you remember the game Battleship?
Yes, I play that with my kids.
I used to line it up so that my opponent was behind a TV, and so I could see where the ships are. I probably shouldn't be admitting that, should I?
Cheating. You're cheating!
Well, you know. But you know what? That takes talent. I'm not sure how close does that person have to sit to the TV for you to be able to understand it's B4 instead of C4 or whatever. You gotta be pretty close.
Yeah, it was just to get the general vicinity. Anyway, I'm gonna edit that out. That's a terrible thing to admit. I'm not coming across well. So let's jump into it. It's check-in time. So I wanted to start really quick, and we can touch on this briefly if it's okay. Beaulieu is out for the season. Yes. Now, you are the... I was going to say, you're the nice one. I'm less so. Yeah. You never want to see someone get hurt, and you never want to see someone lose ice time or, you know, perhaps their livelihood. But I was a nanosecond away from sending the Carlton dance on the Twitter feed. And I decided against it because that's a poor taste. But it does present, and we'll probably get into it in some of the discussions over the past week, but it does present some opportunities, whether it's trade-wise or, you know, it lends itself to a sense of urgency, I think, maybe to get some D help. It doesn't look to me at all like any of your young guys are going to get a shot here in the near future. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of many things going on. But what did you think about the week?
Well, just quickly on the Beaulieu thing, I think what really struck me was learning that he was quite hurt before he got hurt.
Yes.
Right? So he had a torn labrum and a broken bone in his hand, and they were still playing him ahead of Inala and Niku and whoever else, right? They're saying, like, a very broken Beaulieu is still better than these elite young guys. And that was, you know, disconcerting for me. In terms of the week, I mean, it started very well. Again, it was like another week. The Jets were all over the place. Like, you know, we had the Calgary game, and everything happened in that game. So much happened in that game. Mm-hmm. We could spend half an hour talking about all the different things that happened in that game. And then you had the two Toronto games where not much of anything happened. And I don't even know where to start with this team. You know, you could take a look at a very good win in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started very poorly. They fell asleep in the first shift and then were behind, you know, 1-0, at which point I very angrily declared on our group chat that the game was over and it was a victory for Calgary.
Within the first 5 minutes, that was fantastic.
Yeah, 3 minutes, 3 minutes.
Three minutes, right, sorry. Yeah. Get a watch, Mike.
Yeah, get a watch, Mike. Get a watch that works. So, yeah. Another huge thing happened that game was the lineup change, right? With Scheifele centering Ehlers and Connors, and then Dubois centering Wheeler and Stastny, although I don't know, is Stastny centering that line? I don't even know, but that was a big shift that certainly produced some positive results, at least for that game. And the Jets got all the bounces in that game. Like, there was disputed goals, kicked in goals, but they weren't kicked in, and the no call on Scheifele wrestling with Tkachuk in the in the neutral zone on that second goal, a beautiful goal by Howard Scheifele, pardon me.
Freudian.
Yeah. So, and then the no-goal call on Lucic interfering with Helly. I mean, like, everything happened that game. It was, you know, Hellebuyck was outstanding. Best game of the season for Ehlers. I mean, we could go on and on and on about there's so much happened that game, and then, I don't know, what did you think of that one?
Yeah, like, Ehlers and DeMelo were, DeMelo's obviously a lot less flashy, but, you know, there's some Twitter talk about, you know, maybe we should protect Stanley over DeMelo, and I think he's been wildly appreciated for much of his tenure here, and he showed to me, because he does the right things, he's in the right position, so he just doesn't get noticed, but he really has been, like, he's a good defenseman, and he was fantastic that game, and Ehlers, he had, like, the Konami code. Like, I haven't watched a game, a Jet play like that in a long time, and it was incredible. Offensively and defensively, he was all over the ice. Like, that pass to Kopp for that goal is, you know, there's a handful of players in the NHL who can make that play at the speed that he makes it. And you're right. It was, you know, I left that game thinking, well, I don't think we're going to have another game for the remainder of the season that goes that well. Because you're exactly right. We got all the breaks. We got all the calls. And we played well. So I was, you know, I was riding that high into game two, which was, you know, I don't want to be too hyperbolic, but it was a bit of an unmitigated disaster. Like, we came into that game really sluggish, and again, we gained some momentum, I think, near the end, but I think that was more just a product of the Leafs just took their foot off the gas, right, because they had that game in handily, and we probably could have been down 5-0 in the first. Yeah. We were kind of lucky to get away with... Was it 3-0 after the first?
It was certainly 2-0.
2-0 for sure, yeah.
Might have been 3-0. It was 3-0, and then we made it 3-1. You know, much is made of this first game or first period back after a long road trip, and, you know, hockey's hockey. I haven't played professional hockey, but this doesn't hold water with me. Have you heard of it? You know, it's the danger of the first game back after a road trip. Yeah, everyone plays bad.
Common narrative.
Yeah, it's, you know, unless it's, you know, just become a self-fulfilling prophecy in that, you know, hockey players believe it, so it manifests itself. I don't see how it could really be a thing. I mean, you're coming off a road trip, you're playing at home, play, you know. But maybe it's a thing, I don't know. But they certainly got off to a poor start in that opening period against Toronto, which was, you know, unfortunately disconcerting. And they kind of predicted, I don't like it. I don't like the mentality. I would never talk about it if I was a coach. I would never raise it.
No, you put it in people's heads.
Exactly. It's like a running back in football. You don't talk about fumbling. You talk about ball security, right?
Right.
You don't use the F word.
In country music, you just can't say the F word.
I agree the Jets played better in the next two periods. I think they were being outshot 14-2 at one point in the first period and then worked that differential into their favor before the end of the second. So there was a bit of a tilting back. But I don't know. They created a few good chances, but no sustained pressure. And, you know, they didn't really carry the play for extended stretches. I thought they were the better team for the second two periods, but they were... Their offensive threat was spotty at best.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And if we're not allowed to use the F word, this podcast is doomed. But there is an elephant in the room, and I wanted to address it. And again, this is not to be hyper negative or to dwell on things that are. This is just something that I think troubled both of us. Where before game two, there was a quote from Paul Maurice about line matching. And obviously the Leafs, and the Oilers for that matter, have very high-end, top-level offensive talent. And when you're at home, I thought it was sort of common knowledge that if you have the last change, that you try and work the matchups to the best of your ability to gain advantages so that your, and we've talked about this before, so that your best line is against their fourth line and vice versa. And his quote was, "There's not the impetus for either coach to say, I can't win this game, or I have a better chance of winning this game if I get this hard match." Essentially, he was just saying, I don't need to match lines. I'm comfortable with all the lines, and it's overthinking it, so to speak, to do that. And I thought, like, well, I'll ask Vaughn. Like, you're a football coach. You're an offensive coordinator. Again, it's not apples to apples. But isn't that the large part of coaching, is to find and exploit weaknesses or matchups that are favorable to your team or organization? Am I wrong on this?
No, you're not. And I've put a lot of thought into this, trying to look at it through the lens of being a coach, albeit I'm not a professional coach. I coach at the University of Manitoba, so it is relatively high-level athletes, you know, and about the same age as some of the younger guys in the NHL. And so I try to think, how do I justify this? And what I've come up with is, you know, because volume is the enemy in hockey, you just do so much of everything, right? You play so many games. I'm wondering if there isn't a concern, like, I'm not going to line match until late in the season or even the playoffs, because, you know, if I line match too early, they may figure it out. Like, you know, because there's the measure and countermeasure and then countermeasure, and it becomes a game of chess.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. The only thing I can think of is that Paul Maurice just doesn't want to show his hand too early in terms of what he thinks will nullify. And I mean, two, Toronto's pretty deep. You know, so
fair. Spezza and Thornton, they got, like, yeah,
I mean, they have a couple lines that are pretty good. So I don't know if it's just a cat and mouse thing where he's waiting for the right time to apply this. Like, maybe in the first half of the season, I know we're beyond that now, but you don't line match in the first half of the season because you're focused on your own game and those types of things, and it's just too early to do that. So, but I agree. I do think that in this type of situation, you know, I don't know how that impacts a coach's view as to what tactics he wants to employ. I, being a football coach, I live for today. You know, I want to win this game. I'm going to deal with next week. So I don't overthink it by thinking
yeah,
three or four steps down the road. I'm like, what can I do to win this game? Yeah. And for the Jets, you know, they're in this tight battle for first place, where I think first place will mean something.
Right.
So maybe they should be...
That's my thing.
...doing some of these tactical things now.
Yes, and I agree. Like, to me, this was a playoff game, or a quasi-playoff game. And there was a goal there where Matthews' line was on with Stanley and Poolman. And my recollection is accurate, that was a sort of a design move, or not a design move, right? It was just like, well, they were the next line, D-line up, and so they went out there. And I don't think that's tilting your cards, or, like, I think that's something where that should just be a rule, right? Is that you have two young-ish defensemen who are just not capable of, in my humble opinion, of handling that matchup. That's something that you can prevent, playoffs or not. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's, you know, you're right. Like, it comes down to what you believe is the coaching philosophy. If you believe that, you know, we're holding our cards tight to our vest because we're saving it for playoff runs, then, you know, that's not an invalid belief. I lean more that there are certain teams and certain matchups, and especially for a matchup where we're trying to leapfrog into first, play it like a playoff game. I'm not a head coach, but that would be my philosophy, right?
Is, yeah. Do you
win
have
now,
to line,
worry about it later?
Yeah. Do you have to line match against Ottawa on Monday? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Do you have to line match against, Vancouver? Maybe not. I think you have to line match against Edmonton and Toronto. I agree. And how is it that the road team can tactically maneuver to get their top line out against, you know, Stanley and Poolman? Like, those two shouldn't be out together anyway. So I guess it was after a penalty kill or something like that. And the top guys were bagged. So you throw those guys out there just for a shift. And then not only is there enough time for the other visiting coach to see it, but actually get his top players out there. Another thing that bothered me in the two Toronto games was, you know, after Maurice challenged.
Oh, I wondered if you're going to bring that up.
Oh, well, it is a bit of a pet peeve because
You were angry.
I think that it is bad policy. Like, if your team, if you go down 2-0, you got to be so sure that it's goaltender interference. Like,
yes,
it can't be any gray area. You 100%. Can't put your team on the PK after your opponent scores to go up 2-0. You just can't challenge that unless it's so obvious. It's just poor risk management. And that was clearly not goaltender interference.
It wasn't.
It wasn't. So, I don't know. Again, I don't know. Like, if you just call a timeout. If you want a break, just call a timeout.
Yeah.
Like, if you call the timeout, you don't then restart on the penalty kill. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know what was going on there, whether he was trying to get some type of stoppage in play or extended stoppage in play. But I don't know who's looking at that and says, that's goaltender interference. Like, the Jets are my team. The Jets are your team. You know, I see everything through the lens of me wanting the Jets to win. That was so not goaltender interference.
It was.
And then... and then to challenge it and then put your team on the I don't get it. It was sorry, that's my rant for this podcast.
Yeah, no,
that is a pet peeve of mine.
Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
And we were chatting as it was happening, and I was like, there's just no way that's getting overturned. And even if it's a 70% chance, don't do it because it's completely demoralizing to let in a goal and then have to go on the PK right away. Yeah. Again, you have like it has to be just 100% ironclad clear. And I know that's difficult sometimes, but yeah, I agree. The one thing I did like that I thought we played well in game three. I thought it was a really fun game. I enjoyed it. It was back and forth. I know that we gave up a lot of sort of high danger scoring chances, but I thought we got stoned by a goalie. On several occasions.
We got goalied, yeah.
We got goalied, and it's, you know, I get how other teams feel against us, because it's miserable, because I thought we should have had 2-3 additional goals there, but we just got stoned, and it's frustrating, but I thought we looked competent, and we looked like we could hang with them in that game.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that, just in my notes here, I have noted, like, I feel the Jets have been very competitive against the Leafs.
Yeah.
And if we want to beat them in the playoffs, I think, you know, we're just that half step behind them. Not all the time, and not all. I just sense that they have a half step on us somehow, and we need to, you know, we just need a little something more on the back end. And I have wavered dramatically this week as to whether I think we need to trade or keep our assets, or trade or keep our assets. So. I don't know, but, you know, as of right now, I think we need to make a trade. Talk to me tomorrow morning. I like our assets. So we'll see.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. I've vacillated.
I agree. I do think the Jets have been competitive. It was good. I almost enjoy it when it goes to a shootout because I made a promise to myself about a year and a half ago that I would never – like leave the game or go to bed or whatever. I would never be angry after a shootout because it makes no sense to be angry over the result of a coin flip because that's all the shootout is.
Yeah.
It, you're flipping a coin. So it makes no sense to get, you know, we got a point. It wasn't optimal. One out of a possible 4 points.
Yeah.
But in that moment to get angry over, like, I mean, I didn't like choosing Pierre-Luc Dubois as a shooter.
No, that was...
You know, I didn't like that, especially when Wheeler's so good at it. But regardless, it was a fun game. There was lots of back and forth. And I agree with you. I think you hit the nail right on the head. The Jets can compete with this team. I'm just left wondering, do we need just maybe one little thing to help push us forward?
I agree. Should we grab the pre-boarding announcements?
Sure, let's go.
All right. First class.
I one seat in first class and one in coach. The price is the same because your flight was canceled.
Oh. Well, I'll take the first class.
Jerry?
What?
Why should you get the first class?
Elaine, have you ever flown first class?
No.
All right, then. See, you don't know what you're missing. I've flown first class, Elaine. I can't go back to coach. I can't. I won't.
This was a bit difficult. I am going to defer to you this time. It was a bit of a disjointed week, so I had a bit of difficulty really highlighting one player. Who do you get?
Oh, I got Mark Scheifele. He was about the only Jet through the course of three games that was effectively creating offense.
Fair.
He had two goals and two assists in three games. Now, 2-1 in the Calgary game for sure. So he did get an assist in the first Montreal game. It was kept off the board last night. But I felt every time he has the puck, he's dangerous. And I felt he was let down by his line mates a little bit. And we'll get to that when we talk about the penalty box. But I felt he was excellent through the three games. So for me, I'm putting my boy, number 55, into first class.
Nice. I like it. I'm doing more of a bit of a lifetime achievement / season achievement award, kind of like Scorsese when he won for Departed.
I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy.
I'm going Matthew Perreault.
Okay.
I've, as you know, I'm a huge fan. I thought in the second game against the Leafs, I thought the fourth line was tremendous. They had sustained pressure. I thought they turn the ice well, and I think he, no matter what line he's on, he makes a positive difference. And whatever you think about advanced stats, the fourth line, when he was playing on the third line, the expected goals, Corsi, Fenwick, all the numbers, they're all better with him on it. Mm-hmm. And he has that, you know, he's like our Hyman. Like he gets in there. He's an agitator. He creates turnovers. He's great with the stick. He's amazing with the puck still. And I thought he's been in the past three games one of our more consistent players. I agree, Scheifele is probably the obvious choice there, but I wanted to sort of highlight his contributions because he's not going to be here next year. And he's probably, you know, making $4 million a year, probably overpaid to be a fourth line guy, that's for sure. But I think the reason the fourth line, because it's sure shit, not Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis, like the reason our fourth line works and has been working is attributed a significant amount to him. So I wanted to highlight that.
No, I agree. And I do think that he's probably gone next year. I do think that there's a chance that he takes a deep discount and signs a one. Maybe he gets turned. Maybe he signs a 2-year deal worth $1.5 million a year. But that's a huge cut. I don't know what type of market there'll be for him. But yeah, I do think that he's good enough and his advanced stats are good enough that he's going to pique the interest of somebody and will likely be gone. And it's sad, but we need that cap space for Kopp and Lowry.
Yeah, I agree. Penalty box.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
Go ahead, sir. You're the angry one.
Says that on my business card. And I'm sorry, oh Capitan, I'm going with Blake Wheeler.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. This is one where my position was a lot stronger after the Calgary game because, anecdotal or not, the second that Mark Scheifele wasn't on Wheeler's line, he looked like a different player. He popped, he got the two goals, like, it was instantaneous, and the PLD Wheeler line, they were okay. Everyone was okay in that game, but a lot of the same things. And I'm not being, I'm not trying to be mean or negative. It's just I think he's lost a step, and I don't know if he's had a nagging injury, but there are so many times where he's caught flat-footed, and I think he knows that he can't accelerate the way he used to. So there's a lot of flipping the puck and swiping at the puck and gets up ahead of steam. I think he can still wheel a little bit. But I just, defensively, he's just a liability out there sometimes. And there were a few occasions in the you know, he got injured in game two. And part of my argument is that I didn't really notice. I don't think we suffered. I thought we started playing better in the second and third periods. I understand that he's sort of the quote-unquote heart and soul of the team, and that he drives a lot of the locker room presence within the Jets organization. I like him. I think he's changed his game. Like, he's one of the more skilled passers in the NHL. Anyway, I won't go on and on. It was something that, again, this is more of a season-long award for me in the penalty box. I never noticed that before. There are just moments in a game where I'm like, oh, Wheeler, dude.
Yeah.
Come on, man. So I had to put him in the penalty box.
Fair enough. I do think he remains an elite power play specialist.
Absolutely.
And I do think that part of our frustration with him is driven by two things. Where he is in the lineup, and his cap number.
Contract,
it's just, those things aren't really aligned. I mean, maybe on another day we'll talk about, you know, how difficult it is for your play to match what you're actually getting 100%. Paid in that season. Like, you're going to have a period of time where you're dramatically underpaid, and then you're going to have probably a period of time where you're dramatically overpaid, and if you look at it through the whole... It's just a little theory I have, but... I won't dwell on it now. For me, so I respect your choice. For me, I'm going to make a controversial pick here.
Oh,
I'm going to put Nick Ehlers in the penalty box. Because here's why. Despite having an unbelievable game in Calgary, arguably the best anyone has had this year on our team,
yeah,
he didn't follow that up. He was largely invisible against Toronto. We need that guy to show up most nights, maybe not every night, okay, but you can't become invisible when we're playing the best team in our division. So I was a little disappointed in his impact in the Toronto games, especially after such a strong performance. I would have liked to have seen him try to parlay that unbelievably good performance in Calgary into something a little bit more prominent.
I agree.
And, I mean, he's playing with two good players. I just didn't feel he was skating well in those games. Never mind not creating. He wasn't skating well or quote-unquote working hard. I'm sure he was working as hard as he could. But it was a very different Nick Ehlers I saw in the two Toronto games than in the Calgary game. So for that, like, if we want to be a great team, a team that wins multiple series, we need Nick Ehlers to be that good as he was in Calgary, or nearly that good every night, you know. And he kind of disappeared for two games, and we can't have that.
Yeah, it's very fair, and I noticed that as well with the two Toronto games. I was a bit disappointed. We have another sponsor, amazingly. This one, we're really hawking the products, and so we think you guys will like it, so give it a listen.
An all-new Monopoly Empire.
Come On Bro presents an all-new board game, Landlord COVID Edition. Indoctrinate your kids into the real world of property ownership. Just like the original, you can buy and own all types of real estate. Learn how fun it is to manage properties, collect rent, avoid basic upkeep, underpay incompetent contractors for shoddy work, and evict tenants for even the slightest of transgressions.
What's evicting people, Daddy?
It's where Daddy gets people to leave his house. Much like the in-laws after Thanksgiving.
But where will he live?
Under a bridge somewhere. I don't know. Daddy's busy.
The COVID edition now enables you to collect government COVID rent relief while tightening your control over the neighborhood.
This game's stupid.
Oh, you have so much to learn about the world, son.
Designed by the former head of ethics at Enron, Landlord COVID Edition transports you to a world where morals and human decency no longer apply. Careful not to land on free parking, though, because why would a landlord ever want to provide parking for free? So, help raise the next Jared Kushner with Landlord COVID Edition. When you own all the housing, you own it all. Buy it now.
I'm getting that game. Oh. That's a fantastic game. And I think our kids would benefit well. Yes.
Yeah.
Well played.
Jared Kushner, you know, a beacon of light in these dark times.
So we're going to forego, for this week anyway, a player profile. If one of our many, many, many listeners has any ideas or thoughts about who to profile, we're happy to oblige. But I'm going to call this next segment Vacation Bond, semicolon, Beautiful Mind.
I'm hoping to extract an algorithm to define the movement.
Bond's vacation, you know, some people relax, some, you know, COVID, you can't really do much. But Vaughn did a Beautiful Mind deep dive into the season thus far, and he broke it down in this nifty spreadsheet with all sorts of, just a plethora of colors. It's very impressive, Vaughn. And so there were some interesting conclusions that we can, interesting things that we can pull from some of the data that you put together. And we thought we'd go through it, because I thought it was a great sort of synopsis of the season thus far, but I'll let you sort of break down what you captured and maybe just some of the initial thoughts or findings that you came across.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. I will note that the guy in A Beautiful Mind did go crazy at the end. So I don't know if that's some foreshadowing or... No, my cable wasn't working very good, so I couldn't watch Netflix or anything this week. So it was like, let's go do some research. So I think there was, I think it was actually on one of the broadcasts that mentioned at that moment that the Jets were 17-0-0 when they score four or more goals. So I kind of made a note to myself, that's interesting, look into that. So currently, I think because we've played a couple games since then, the Jets are an impressive 18-0-0 when they score four or more goals, but their record falls to 4-13-3 when they score three or less goals. So for me, that's like, it's a tale of two cities, a tale of two worlds. So I, like as Mike said, I pulled together a little spreadsheet and compared and contrasted some different variables, and we'll kind of work our way through some of the things that jump out at you. And this isn't advanced stats. This is very basic stuff. And I think what we're going to arrive at when we're done going through this is it's going to underscore the importance of, if you want to learn more about the game, going to some of these websites, and because they're on a different level. Also, it may also underscore how advanced stats aren't really informative for the players, because they don't tell them what they need to be doing. They describe what is happening, and maybe when they're good, they describe why it's happening. But ultimately, the players are left with, what do we do about it? So this is just very basic. So hopefully this can, you know, allay some misconceptions or anyways, I'll get into it. So the first question I asked myself when looking at these two groups of games, are the Jets simply getting more shots on goal in games where they're scoring more? And what I found was, no, there is no link between shots and goal and goal scoring outcomes. In the 18 games that the Jets scored four or more goals, they were outshot in nine of them. So that's 50% of the time. They're getting outshot in games they're scoring all these goals in. In the 20 games where the Jets scored three or less goal, the Jets outshot their opponents in 11 of those games. So in more than half of the games where they're not scoring, they're outshooting their opponent. So it's not about shot differential or getting a whole bunch of shots. There's something different. So it's not just shot volume.
Yeah. So when I look at, you know, when you say when they're 18-0 with scoring four or more goals, that was the first thing I thought. It was the first conclusion that I drew in my mind without any knowledge. It was like, well, we're probably just getting more shots, and it's probably indicative about the opponent that we're playing. And, you know, there's your correlation. We're done. But I was surprised to see that that's not the case at all, actually.
Yeah, so the next thing I looked at is their shooting accuracy. Now, I didn't really dive into high-danger scoring chances.
Right.
But I did look at shooting percentage. So what's happening? So you would think there's a natural correlation between when you score a lot of goals, your shooting percentage is going to be higher than when you don't. Okay, that makes sense. But I think what's interesting here is the degree to which they change in these two different buckets of outcomes. So in the games where the Jets score four or more goals, their shooting percentage is an incredible 15.6%.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah. And in the games where they score three or less goals, it drops to 6.4%. So, yeah, okay, they score lots of goals when they shoot good, and they don't when they don't, okay? But that's a huge differential. The league average shooting percentage is 9.6%, according to hockeyreference.com. So they're way above the average shooting percentage when they're winning these games, and significantly, like 33% below it when they're not. So there's huge swings in scoring percentage or in shooting percentage. Okay, so let's look at our opponents. In the games where the Jets score four or more goals, our opponent's shooting percentage is 7.4%, which is only it's 9.4%, only slightly below the league average of 9.6%. In the games where the Jets score three goals or less, our opponent's shooting percentage is 9.4%, just below the league average.
Yeah.
So it's super not driven by what our opponents are doing. You know, our swings are much greater than our opponents' swings. So, and lastly, on shooting percentage, the Jets shot over 10% accuracy in all of the games in which they scored four or more goals, and have only shot 10% or better in four of the 19 games in which they scored three or less. In those games, they're two wins and two losses.
Yeah.
So again, when they're hot, they're hot, and when they're not, they're not. And it's really translating and really driving these two different records.
Yeah, and that was I didn't know the league average was about 9.6. Statistically and mathematically, the swing between 15.6 and 6.6 is significant. I'm not a statistician, but I can imagine, and you know, you didn't do this for every single team, but I would imagine that swing is probably the greatest in the league, because that's too significant of a standard deviation between the mean to be anything other than that. So it was illuminating to me, where it was like, okay, it bears out what we've been talking about, right? Like, when we're hot, we're kind of unbeatable, and when we're not, it's bad. It's stinky.
Not good. So then I looked at goaltending. Can goaltending help explain this difference in record? Because what I was going to say, just to your point, the really interesting part of this is we have two groups of games which are about equal in number. So we have 18 games where we're winning and scoring lots of goals, and 20 games where we're not. So, you know, the numbers should be easy to compare to one another, right? So they're two generally representative samples. We have enough data so that there's a decent comparison here. There's some real trends that are emerging. So as I said, then I looked at goaltending. And what was interesting here was we get really good goaltending when we score a whole bunch of goals. You know, maybe it means we're spending more time in the opponent's end, but again, somehow that's not translating into shots, because only 50% of the time are we out shooting our opponents. So it seems like when we decide to shoot really accurately, our goaltending is really good. In the games in which the Jets score four or more goals, our goaltending save percentage is .923, and our opponent's goaltending save percentage is .842. Now, you would think when we're shooting really good, you know, they're not going to make a lot of saves.
Yeah.
So in all of the games where we scored four or more goals, the save percentage our opponent has been less than .900. Okay, in these games, the Jets have posted a goaltending save percentage of .900 only five times. And in 11 games, we had a save percentage over .912. Okay,
yeah.
So
yikes.
In comparison, when we score three goals or less, our save percentage is only .897. So, strangely, when we're not scoring, our good goaltending dries up.
That's the one that I can't explain. Obviously, there's a correlation there, but I can't figure out the causation.
Yes. I don't get it.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
To me, those two data points are, you would think anyway, objectively separate and distinct. The goaltending and how the offense's, you know, shooting percentage shouldn't be directly linked, but the stats kind of bear it out, where it's like, it was puzzling to me, where I was like, how is it possible that not only are we not sniping the puck, But our goaltending, which is normally normally amazing, it all of a sudden dries up. It's a weird phenomenon.
Yeah, there was also really few games where both teams were getting great goaltending. So there was a number of games where it was a 2-1 game where both guys are at 967 or something like that. But usually we're getting goalied or we're out goalieing the other team. It is strange how those things are moving together. So
sure.
The next thing I asked myself was the power play, right? Is the power play driving a higher shooting percentage and goal scorings when we score 4 or more goals? And I found this to be pretty interesting as well. In the 18 games that the Jets have scored 4 or more goals, our power play is at 26.3%, 15 of 57. In the 20 games that the Jets have scored 3 or less goal, the Jets' power play is 25%, 13 of 52. So there's no difference. There's no difference. So maybe this suggests that, you know, the problem is 5-on-5. I don't know. But the power play does not seem to be the source of the increased goal scoring, because we're just as effective on the power play when we score 3 or less than if we score 4 or more.
Yeah,
so it's not like we're getting hot when we have the man advantage.
Right, and the opponent's power play was similar. That you know, basically the numbers speak to say the opponent's power play is actually more successful in the games where we scored 4 more goals. And, you know, that to me would suggest that we're probably in a high-scoring game and it's a bit more high-flying. But it's a different animal, the power play. So I found that interesting as well, that, essentially, I think that the power play doesn't factor in to the...
explanation.
To the difference, in the two buckets.
So the next thing I know you would ask, Mike, is, are we racking up all these goals against the weaker teams in the North Division?
The Leeds are weak.
The Leeds are weak. The fucking Leeds are weak. You're weak.
And the answer is, to a small degree, yes. But the Jets have shown they can score against all the teams in the North Division. The Jets have scored 4 or more goals 4 times, each versus Ottawa and Vancouver, who are the bottom teams. They've scored 4 or more goals 3 times each against Calgary and Montreal, who are kind of in the middle. We're in the middle.
Yeah.
And twice each versus Edmonton and Toronto, who are the top teams. So I found that interesting. It's heartening in that we can score goals. We're not just racking up all these goals against the bottom feeding teams. You know, there is some connection there. We seem to be able to do it more often to the bottom teams, but you would expect that. You know, that's what you do if you're a good football team or a good hockey team. You take advantage of the bad teams when you play them.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And so I guess in terms of the breakdown, it seems to be, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it comes down to, and I think what we've been driving at throughout this podcast is sort of elite shooting and goaltending. Was that your
I agree.
Thought as well?
Because the last thing I would say, it's not, you know, the last question is this being driven by line matchups and having the last change in your home games? So we've already discussed that Maurice doesn't hard line match. Okay, he doesn't do that. Jets' home record is 10-6-2. Their away record is 12-7-1, so there's no correlation there. So, you know, what are we left with? We've looked at some of these basic stats, and they just kind of suggest that, you know, some games the Jets shoot the lights out, and their goaltending is really good in those games, and other games they just don't show up. So, you know, I don't know. We're left with more questions than answers, which, again, suggests that there are much smarter people looking more deeply into these things. And even then, you know, what do we do with that information? How do we translate that information into useful tactical and technical things we can provide the players that will change their game or shape their game in a way that will make us produce better outcomes? And this goes back also to the discussion we had last week, you know, about low event hockey versus high event hockey. You know, what we're left with here is, it sure looks like we need to score goals to win games.
Yeah, and if we don't, we lose. And I'm going to put that on a loop when I visit you in the funny farm. Yes. after we erase all your scratchings on the glass to the front of your house. But I really enjoyed that exercise. Should we do some trivia?
Trivia. I got a good one for you this week. Let's move on to trivia.
Uh-oh. Okay. I was doing some Twitter dives and my official guide and record book. Unfortunately, it's not laden with a lot of Jets records. So I was going to go back to that well, but it didn't really work out because it's my own knowledge. I didn't know much of this. We're going to do some Jets trade history.
Okay.
See if you can name all the factors of some of these sort of quote unquote blockbuster trades. And we're going to start with Evander Kane.
Okay.
Who did the Jets trade away and who did we get and who from? Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah. It's the Evander Kane trade was between the Jets and Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Going to Buffalo was Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian.
Snowy.
And a goaltender.
Oh, I like it.
A Manitoba goaltender whose name will come to me. I want to say Darcy, but that's not it. Anyways, coming back was Tyler Myers, Drew Stafford.
Yeah.
And...
Oh. This is the one I forgot.
Yeah, you're going to have to help me.
There was two. Joel Armia.
Oh, yes.
Brandon Lemieux.
Oh, yes.
And a first-round pick, which we used to get the greatest hockey player of all time, Jack Roslovic.
Oh, wow. What a haul. And what was the name of the goalie you saw on the tip of my tongue?
Yeah, Jason Kasdorf.
Jason Kasdorf.
Kasdorf. Yeah, Dorf.
Kasdorf, yeah.
Good for you.
Wow, what a haul.
Honestly, you can judge trades at this juncture because it's long past. We crushed that one.
Yeah, but, interestingly, Drew Stafford gone. Tyler Myers gone.
Fair.
He was terrible. I didn't like him.
I kind of like Tyler Myers. He grew on me.
Brendan Lemieux. Yeah. MAGA jerk face. He's gone. Jack Roslovic gone. He got healthy scratch today.
And he did get healthy scratch. And that was it. And Armia's gone.
Armia's gone. So,
but in the totality, I think it was a good trade. Yeah, what we got out of it in terms of, and what we gave was, I think, an overall W. We're gonna go back in the Wayback Machine. This is a bit harder, so I apologize.
Okay.
Timu Solani.
Oh, Chad Kilger and Oleg Devidovsky.
Oh my goodness! Nice work.
Yeah.
And
don't bother me with draft picks. I mean, there's only so much my brain can handle.
Right. So yeah, we swapped fourth and thirds, and we gave up Timu and Mark Chouinard. Never heard of. And it was interesting. I did a bit of a deep dive in terms of what the rationale was at the time, and it was new ownership, and it happened. This kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore, right? Because there are so many people involved and so much on the line and so much scrutiny with Twitter. This was basically like someone woke up one day and was like, we should shake things up. You want to trade Solani? Sure, let's do that. And then they had like a couple phone calls and it was done.
Really?
And Timo was like, it was completely out of the blue. They told him afterwards. Anyway, it was, I can't even, Kilger and Tevardovsky, I think were somewhat highly regarded at the time. But
yeah.
Again, it was just one of those things where you read about the context of the trade and it would that kind of stuff at least wouldn't be published now, where it was basically like, yeah, we thought, what the hell? So we traded away a generational score. And it was just a weird thing.
My recollection is that there wasn't a belief that they could afford him in Tkachuk and Zamenhof. So they were going to build around Tkachuk. And so they shipped him out.
Oh, interesting.
That's my recollection. And I wonder how many times Mark Chouinard has sit around a campfire, had a few beers, and told people, like, do you know I was involved in the Timu Solani trade? And people just won't believe him.
No.
And yeah,
get out of here.
Every summer he tells that 11 times drunk around a fire. I guarantee it.
I guarantee it too. So I have a couple more, but that's good. You go ahead because the ones I had were kind of minor ones. So hit me.
Okay, you know the topic is Nick Antropov.
Let's do it, Nick.
Okay, Nick Antropov played for the Winnipeg Jets 2.0 for two seasons. Was the total amount of games he played for the Jets over or under 110 games? Was the total amount of games he played for the Jets over or under 110? 82 games in a season. 164
games. He was oft injured, wasn't he? Like I remember him being, again, when you have the guy's jersey, you tend to pay attention a bit.
Oh. You think you would pay attention.
You would. You think you would.
Have you got any of these? You know, there's only so much Nick Antropov trivia out there. You could spend half of your lunch hour one day and learn everything there is.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to spoil it. Because we're working from a limited pool. I'm going to go under.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Under is the correct answer. He played 109 games as a Jet.
Oh, you tricky.
He played 69 games in 2011-12. Nice. And 40 games in 2012-2013. So under is correct.
Nice. Well, I think it's last call.
Hey, guys. Just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
All right. So taking a look at what we have upcoming, the Jets are going to play three games this week or before the next episode of the podcast. Their schedule has changed. So there are two games against Vancouver, which were slated for Sunday and Tuesday, have been postponed. They've moved the game against Ottawa in there to Monday. That's a home game. And then they play in Montreal on Thursday and Saturday. So three games this week. A nice balance. I was happy to see that they moved a game in there. 6 days off would have been great, but you also lose a bit of your touch. So having one game in there and bringing Ottawa, I thought it was, well, yeah.
Who knows, right? Who knows?
Jets are 4-1 against the Senators this year. The Senators have lost two straight games to Montreal and one to Toronto. Prior to that, they beat the Flames twice, but lost to the Canucks in the team games before that. Mm. You know, they've won some games this year, but they're all over the place.
Yeah, they are. They've gotten better.
Given the tight race, the Jets find themselves in the North right now. This is a must-win game because I think, you know, they're going into Montreal. They've been playing better. They're back from their recent COVID vacation, and they've got a bunch of games in hand. That's going to be interesting because it's either going to make or break Montreal's ability to come up and challenge with the top three teams, or if the Jets can take those two games at Montreal, even with the games in hand, there's going to be too much separation. They're 7 points behind the Jets right now, but they have five games in hand. So a very interesting week coming up for the Jets.
Okay. What are your predictions? What are your thoughts?
Two wins, one loss. The Jets beat Ottawa and split in Montreal. What do you think?
That's what I had. Exactly. Okay. Look at us. That's exactly what I had.
Well, you know, before we sign off, I just want to say a couple points of clarification from last week.
Okay.
Okay, first, just before the fake commercial, the faux commercial, as I like to call it, you referred to me as Van. Van is your nephew.
I sure did. I wondered if you noticed that.
I am your podcast co-host.
Oh, okay? Sorry,
so
buddy.
You were very excited to introduce the Men's Sartorial Society spot, so I don't blame you. And then what reminded me of this is, I have to apologize, my weekly prediction last week didn't add up. I said the Jets would beat Calgary and Vancouver and then split with Toronto, which makes for 3-1. But in the end, I said the Jets would go 2-1-1. So I did some bad maths there. So that's on me, my bad. So
My wife noticed. She's like, did you just call Vaughn Van? I'm like, sure did. I go, do you think he'll notice? And she's like, yep, you sure will. And you didn't say anything. So I was like, I did it. I got away with it. But kudos.
No, it's okay. I just knew you were excited because we had a good new sponsor. And
I was excited.
All right. So, all right, man. Okay. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.
Two halves in the stick, Loungers.